Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. This is Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I'm joined by my co-host, Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries. Ray, why don't you tell our listeners, for those who may be new to the program, just tuning in on a day when you're co-hosting with us, what is Keep Believing Ministries? What do you do? What's available at your website?
Well, let me answer the last part first, Ed, that if you come to our website, keepbelieving.com, I just opened it right now to see what's up on the front page. There are Bible studies. There's one called How Faith Works. There's one called What Does It Mean to Believe the Bible? There's one called Are You Willing to Wait for God? On our website, we have put together hundreds of sermons, Bible studies, FAQs, podcast videos to help Christians here in America and around the world to know what it means to believe in God, to believe in Jesus, and then find the strength and courage in this messed up world to keep believing in Him. You know, I mentioned on Tuesday when we were together, Ed, that I'd heard from a pastor in Pakistan. Well, I heard from him again yesterday, just talking about a tremendous number of people in Pakistan coming to Christ under his ministry. And I just say that because it's through the internet. I've never met this pastor. I've never been to Pakistan. That's a tough place to be a Christian.
Sure is.
But he comes to the Keep Believing website to get free biblical resources for his ministry on the other side of the world. So that's what we do, and invite all of our listeners to surf on over to keepbelieving.com and check us out.
Well, and folks, just as it now, of course, Ray didn't ask me to say this or suggest it or hint at it, but I just want to let you know, just personally, if you're an Ed Vitagliano fan out there, first of all, why? Second of all, let me just give you a bit of good Christian advice. Go to keepbelieving.com. I am a big Ray Pritchard fan. That's why I give him all these great introductions. I don't do that for everybody. I'm a big fan. He's an excellent Bible teacher. And folks, there is just no way to put any sort of human, this worldly value on what Keep Believing Ministries is doing around the world. When you talk about Pakistan, I agree with Ray. It is from what little I know, a very, very tough place to be a Christian. And here this pastor is reaching many for Christ. So help that ministry out. Go to keepbelieving.com. And as the Lord leads, please donate to what Ray is doing, because I'm a firm believer in it. So, Ray, thank you for what you guys are doing there at Keep Believing Ministries. KeepBelieving.com is the website. All right. I mentioned last hour, I want to do this just, we got a couple of minutes here before our next guest. We have Share-a-thon coming up October 18th, 19th, and 20th. And those are our Share-a-thon dates for this fall. So what we do in the lead up to Share-a-thon is we take and air listener testimonies, listener stories. People will call in. We'll air those during Share-a-thon, during the 3 days of Share-a-thon as well. And what we're asking for, and I'll give you the phone number if you want to participate in this. I'll just give you the phone number in just a few moments. But if you have a story about how God has used American Family Radio in your life, perhaps we've inspired you to be prepared to vote this November, maybe more engaged in the culture war. That's what we try to do, is to inform and equip and activate people to go out there and do something. Has American Family Radio made your life different in any way? Positive, hopefully. If we've impacted your home or your workplace, do you have a story of how God used us in your life in an exceptional way, then we just ask you to call and share your story. When you call this number, you'll be walked through by prompts and told exactly how to do it, so there's no science involved. You don't even have to be necessarily technologically savvy. So here's the number to call. It's 877-876-8893, 877-876-8893. 876-8893, the number to call. You're going to hear this on AFR from now until Share-a-thon. That is coming up again, October 18th, 19th, and 20th. We want your listener stories. Please let us know if we have impacted you in a positive way. All right, our next guest is with us, New York Times bestselling author Robert Spencer. He's director of Jihad Watch. It's a program of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. He's the author of 15 books on Islam. Yes, he is an expert, including the book we're going to discuss with him today, and that is The Complete Infidel's Guide to Iran. The Complete Infidel's Guide to Iran. Robert Spencer. Robert, welcome to back, I should say, to Today's Issues.
Always good to be here. Thank you.
Well, Robert, this is very, it's kind of a provocative title, The Complete Infidel's Guide to Iran. I would say it's a little bit humorous, even a little tongue-in-cheek, but there's nothing funny about Iran or how they view people who live in the West, is there?
No, not at all. And, you know, the title actually is designed to make the point that even people of faith who are Christians, Jews, whatever, non-Muslims, are considered by Muslims to be infidels and consequently to be under the mandate that Islam teaches that the infidels have to be waged war against and subjugated and made to accept the hegemony of Islamic rule. And so this is something that is important when with regard to the Islamic Republic of Iran, when we're considering things like this nuclear deal and Obama's incredible generosity toward them, that this is not going to result in Iranian goodwill toward us. They're still going to think of us as infidels and still think of us as essentially enemy combatants and their primary enemy in the world.
Robert, could you say something about Islam itself? We're told, I mean, we hear from President Obama, but we heard it from President Bush, too, over and over again, that Islam is, quote, a religion of peace. But you say in your book, in fact, in a number of your books, that's clearly not true. What is it? What is the truth about Islam? If it's not a religion of peace, how would you characterize it?
Islam is actually the only major religion that has a developed doctrine and theology and legal system that mandates warfare against unbelievers. And this informs pretty much everything when it comes to the relations of Muslim countries to non-Muslim. And so the Islamic Republic of Iran, based on what they consider to be their responsibility before Allah to wage war against infidels, has been on a war footing with the United States since 1979.
Robert, in the news here recently, and you know, we need experts like you to kind of help us see through the various viewpoints we read on online or when we listen to news broadcasts. This in the news recently, this $400 million that the U.S. paid to Iran. Now, there was talk about this being a ransom to Iran. Others were saying it wasn't a ransom. It was a legitimate debt that the U.S. was obligated to pay and had been obligated to pay, and the timing was just coincidental. Help us understand what the truth is about this $400 million deal.
It quite obviously was a ransom, and that is established definitively by the word of the hostages themselves, who reported before any of this became controversial. They did not. They had no way of knowing that they were saying something that the administration would not want them to say or know, or would not want people to know. They said that the Iranians had told them that they weren't going to be released until the plane arrived with the money, and that the and then later the Obama administration denied that, but only to the extent of saying, no, we only sent the plane with the money after the hostages were freed. But even in both scenarios, the money is tied to the hostages' fate, and so it was clearly a ransom payment. As far as the argument that this is money that belongs to the Islamic Republic of Iran, that is false on the face of it. This is money that the United States was holding ever since the time of the toppling of the Shah. The Shah of Iran was making a deal for weapons with the United States. The deal, for whatever reason, fell through, but some payments had already been made. Before the United States could return that money, the Shah was toppled from power. And even Jimmy Carter, who had betrayed the Shah and overseen the coming to power of the Islamic Republic, never thought that that money belonged to the Islamic Republic. He did not think that they were the legitimate heirs of the Shah's death. And so not only Carter, but Reagan and then the first Bush and Clinton and the second Bush, none of them thought this is money that belongs to Iran. We have to return it. Only Barack Obama has taken that step.
We're talking with Robert Spencer. He's the director of Jihad Watch and author of The Complete Infidel's Guide to Iran. So a lot of this is all about whether or not Iran is going to get a nuclear weapon, which I think most of us agree. It's just a question of when, not if. So when that day comes, this year, next year, year after, whenever it happens that Iran has working nuclear weapons, what are they going to do with them? Do they want this just for, I suppose you would say just to as a bargaining chip, or would they actually use them?
Well, there's no doubt. This is a genocidally minded regime. They have repeatedly called for the destruction of Israel. They have said that Israel is not going to last the next 25 years. And there is no doubt whatsoever that if they get nuclear weapons, then they will use them against Israel. Now, the problem, the one reason why many people think they won't do that is because the Israelis or the Americans, although that seems less likely now, would stop them. And the problem is with that they don't even care. Ali Akbar Hashemi Rafsanjani, former president of Iran, said about 15 years ago that if we nuke Israel, Israel would be destroyed. But if the Israelis retaliate, then we would sustain 10 to 15 million casualties, and we could survive that. Now, how a man could be talking insouciantly about 10 to 15 million of his countrymen being dead, that the answer to that comes from Shiite Islam and the fact that the savior figure of Shiite Islam, the Mahdi, is going to return to the world in Shiite mythology at a time when the Muslims are more persecuted than they've ever been before. And so a lot of people have thought that they might be actually wanting to be nuked so that the retaliatory nuke would kill so many Iranians that it would be the persecution that the 12th Imam needs to return to Earth.
So this, you know, since this is a religiously oriented state, we're talking about Iran, this is a theological view that has taken hold. So the theology, in other words, is running their foreign policy or their desire to get nuclear weapons. This is all in the hands of the mullahs. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's quite right. And it's very important that the factor that has been completely disregarded in Washington, and that is Shiite Islamic theology, when it comes to understanding what Iran is all about, that's the factor that is fueling all their actions and guiding and motivating what they're doing. It is all about Shiite Islam.
Look, let me just ask you this as a follow-up then. If the Obama administration is underestimating the Iranian threat, why is that? We got smart people, I assume, in Washington who pay attention to these kinds of things that you're talking about, the foundational elements, the religiously foundational factors that guide the foreign policy of Iran. Why has the Obama administration grossly underestimated this?
Well, actually, I think that's the problem. And I think we don't have people in Washington who are dealing with the theological aspects of this problem. The Obama administration is bound as a matter of policy to denying that Islam has anything to do with Islamic terrorism. And so the idea that they might be looking at Islamic theology to explain the mindset of the Islamic Republic of Iran, that's just what they had determined not to do. And so they constantly misunderstand Iran and the Islamic Jihad threat in general because they refuse to examine its motivating ideology. This goes back to October 2011. When 57 Muslim and allied organizations wrote to John Brennan demanding that all mention of Islam and jihad be removed from counter-terror training, and he immediately complied. And so now there's just nothing that you will learn from if you were to go join the FBI today, say, that you won't be trained about Islamic jihad. You will not be taught about the guiding ideology behind jihad terror, nor will you learn anything about the guiding ideology behind the Islamic Republic of Iran.
We're talking with Robert Spencer, director of Jihad Watch, author of The Complete Infidel's Guide to Iran. Well, we've backed ourselves into a very bad corner, dealing with some obviously genocidal people who really want, because of the theology, they want to get nuclear weapons and actually use them, which I think, Robert's hard for us in the West. We hear what you said about the Mahdi and all that, and it's hard for Americans to wrap our heads around it, but it's true. So the last chapter of your book talks about what can be done going forward from this untenable place. What should American policy be toward Iran going from here?
Well, we have to admit, as a matter of policy, that Iran has been on a war footing against the United States ever since 1979, and that they are aggressively pursuing this war. And even their client, Hezbollah, the terror group, is even right south of the border training drug cartels and working with the drug cartels. And so we need to, in the first place, recognize all this and put a stop to it. We can't get our money back, but we can institute new sanctions and warn the Iranians that none of this global adventurism is going to be tolerated anymore, and that their nuclear ambitions are not going to be tolerated anymore. A strong president could do this, but of course we have to have one.
Robert, what do you make of the, it's been in the news, I don't know how high on, you know, whether it's on most people's radar screens, but this kind of naval game, these games of chicken that the Iranians have been playing with U.S. Naval forces, you know, with the speedboats. Are they trying to provoke the U.S. into an incident? What's their end game there? What now?
They know that there won't be one, because they know that Obama is basing his so-called legacy on this nuclear deal and the claim that he brought peace to the region. And so they know that they can do whatever they want, essentially, and that he will not retaliate. He will not respond. And so because they've been on this war footing with the United States for so long, that essentially gives them a green light to be as aggressive as they wish in the Gulf. And they know that he won't do anything. And so they're taking the opportunity to humiliate the United States, which they have constantly reiterated is their foremost enemy, as often and in as many ways as they can.
So as we look at this election coming up between Trump and Clinton, do the Iranians, I mean, obviously they're over there, we're here, but are they cheering for one side or the other, Trump versus Clinton?
Well, they haven't made any public announcements, but I don't think there's any doubt that they would love to see Hillary Clinton as president, because they know that she would continue the Obama policies, which have enabled them and empowered them in so many different ways.
Well, so what would a strong president, and of course we're not allowed on the air to favor or disfavor, we can't, any particular candidate, but what would a strong president do? You said a strong president could rein in Iran, and so what kind of tactics, what overall strategy, if you were, let's say we made you, I just... you know, wave my magic wand. You are, you know, Secretary of State, or you know, you have a consultant's position with the next president. What would you advise them to do?
Oh, well, I'd say that we would have to clear out Hezbollah from the Western Hemisphere, and that means clearing them from Mexico, from Venezuela, and from the Triple Frontier region in South America, and make it very clear that any sign that Iran is pursuing a nuclear weapon is going to be stopped by any means possible, that will include military action if necessary, not going in and nation building and all the nonsense that got us into so much difficulty in Iraq and Afghanistan, but just action against their nuclear program, and then we get out. And the client terror groups, we will aggressively resist and stop everywhere we can.
Well, let me ask you about the question of of the minorities inside the country of Iran itself, particularly about Christians. That's something that we're very interested in here. Is there any sort of religious freedom inside an Islamic republic like Iran?
There is, but only within very, very sharp limits. The Islamic law mandates that non-Muslims can live in an Islamic state and practice their religion if they submit to Islamic hegemony and submit to various humiliating and discriminatory regulations. And so certainly in Iran, non-Muslims face all kinds of low-level persecution all the time. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the former president of Iran, had vowed to eradicate Christianity from Iran. Of course, he wasn't able to do that, but he made life very difficult for Christians. Quite a few of them were jailed. Even now, to this day, it's a very difficult time. They're very difficult for Christians in Iran, and they are subjected to harassment and arrest without any warning, simply in many cases for worshiping and for having churches. The Christian gatherings and homes have been broken up and the Christians arrested. There have been several pastors who have been in jail for many years, who were in jail for many years and were just part of those, some of those hostages that were released for that money recently included some of them. They were in prison for proselytizing because, of course, that is illegal in the Islamic Republic of Iran. And any Islamic proselytizing is, of course, allowed, but not proselytizing for any other religion.
Robert, let me ask you to say just a quick word about the relationship between ISIS and Iran. If it's a big poker game and Iran obviously is a big seat at the table, what's their point of view toward ISIS and also what's happening in Syria at the moment?
And we have about 60 seconds, Robert.
All right. Well, ISIS and Iran are at war with each other, and they're primarily fighting in Iraq. But at the same time, Iran's client, the Assad regime in Syria, is also fighting against ISIS from the other side. And so it's the Sunni-Shiite divide, Iran being Shiite and ISIS being Sunni.
Robert Spencer has been our guest. He's a New York Times best-selling author. He's director of Jihad Watch. It's a program of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. We've been discussing the book he's written, The Complete Infidel's Guide to Iran. Robert, tell our listeners where they can go to find out more at Jihad Watch, some more of your writings, or if you're speaking somewhere, where they can find out that information.
Yeah, jihadwatch.org, jihadwatch.org, and that's updated many times daily with news and commentary about jihad activity, violent and stealthy, domestic and international.
Well, Robert, we thank you so much for being on the show, but also maybe more importantly, certainly more importantly, for all the writing you do, all the research. We those of us out here who want to know what's really going on oftentimes can't turn to the regular mainstream media to find this out. So we certainly do lean heavily on folks like yourself. We appreciate not only your intelligence and your research, but your courage, because I'm sure this is not a safe occupation for you. So thank you for what you do, Robert.
Thank you very much.
Well, folks, that is all the time we have for this edition of Today's Issues. We've covered the gamut, I think. Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries. Ray, thanks for being on with me today.
Thanks, Ed. Great to be with you.
And his ministry is Keep Believing Ministries, keepbelieving.com. That's Ray Pritchard, I mean. Folks, we're done. Keep listening to American Family Radio for more great programming directly ahead and on throughout the day. Tomorrow, this show, Today's Issues, morphs into Trivia Friday. So that is coming up tomorrow. And then, of course, after that, you know what you're headed for, the weekend. So please tune in tomorrow. We'll see you tomorrow, Lord willing. Bye for now.